You know, the online world is great for so many things. It's great for making you laugh, it's great for entertainment, and every now and again you come across ideas or people that literally blow your mind. But I still think some of our best thinking happens offline. So join me, Nessa, on Offline Thoughts as I chat about some of the things I think about when I'm not online. I'm really glad you're listening, and I hope you enjoy the episode. In today's episode, I'd like to talk about weed. So I live in London, and one of the things that I've become increasingly aware of in the last few years is how pervasive weed smoking is. And I'm not talking about weed smoking at the end of a club night or at house parties or just like any other gathering. I'm talking about just everyday weed smoking. Like, you know, for example, I'll be going to work at 6 o'clock in the morning, so I have a long commute, and I'll see like a construction worker lighting up, or I'll be going to the corner shop to buy some cat food, and it'll be like middle of the afternoon on a Saturday, and somebody will be lighting up, or I'll be around central London just doing some shopping on the weekend or in the evenings, and you know, I'm smelling it every 5 to 10 minutes. Okay, maybe 5 to 10 minutes is an exaggeration, but over the course of the evening, I will have smelt weed multiple times. And I can't say that this has always been the case. I mean, maybe it's just a situation where the more you become aware of something, the more you notice it. You know, like when you learn a new word and then suddenly you see that word everywhere when before you never came across that word before. So maybe because as I've gotten older, I've become more sensitive to the smell of weed, and also just like a growing sense of awareness that it's smoked a lot more than it used to be. So maybe that's why I'm noticing it. But I honestly don't think it's because I'm zoning in. I think that it's become increasingly one of those drugs that just is socially acceptable. Almost, not quite at the same level, but almost in the same way that alcohol is socially acceptable. In fact, you know, and maybe this is just the people I hang around, but honestly, I see it a lot more. I would say, in a way, smoking weed in some circumstances is more socially acceptable than drinking alcohol. So for example, there are people who wake up and they smoke weed. You know, they're walking down the street and they're smoking weed. And for the most part, especially I guess because it's a big city and people generally face their front, but you don't get a sort of sense of worry, you know. So for example, like if you're on the train station or on the tube or on the underground at 6 o'clock in the morning and you see somebody with a whiskey bottle, most people in that carriage are going to be self-aware. They're going to be on edge because there's somebody who's sort of violating like social norms. You know, they're drinking first thing in the morning, unless of course it looks like they're, you know, they're coming home from a night out, but even still at 6 a.m. that's kind of bizarre to see. So I would say with alcohol, if you saw somebody doing that, you would say that person is quite clearly an alcoholic. Or for example, if they're just walking down the street, you know, with a bottle of vodka on a Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, drinking from that bottle down the street, you would think, oh, that's bizarre. Or that is somebody who clearly has alcohol dependency because they can't even take a walk without drinking. Now, when we think about how weed is perceived, at least from my vantage point, is I really don't think people are looking at weed in that same way. So people walk down the street in the middle of the afternoon smoking weed. People wake up and they bake. People, you know, are having weed every single evening. They're having it on the weekends. They're having it at, you know, all kinds of social gatherings. They're having it at baby showers. They're having it at weddings. They're having it, you know, even at funerals. They're having it at work, at lunch. They're having it before work. In a way where if you were to replace that with alcohol, you would call that person an alcoholic. You would say that they have a condition that obviously means that they're dependent on alcohol. Whereas I don't see the same kind of language being used with marijuana. And before I delve into why I think it's problematic, you know, quick disclosure to say that I do think that there are some benefits to weed. So for example, lots of people use it for legitimate pain relief, you know, especially conditions like chronic conditions like arthritis or MS, you know, it does alleviate their symptoms. And also in the realm of mental health, I don't necessarily think that escapism through marijuana is a negative thing. So people use it to cope with anxiety, with PTSD and other mental, you know, low level mental health conditions where they just need respite or they need to be calmed or they need to still the thoughts in their minds. And in those circumstances, outside other potentially addictive components of marijuana, I don't think that's a poor use, or I wouldn't condemn people who use it for those purposes. But I feel as though, you know, the benefits kind of end there. And also another caveat is, I also understand that marijuana, in terms of the escapism, isn't that different to other escapisms that we indulge in. So many people, for example, drink alcohol, and with alcohol, it's basically the same thing. You're consuming a substance that makes you feel less connected to your circumstances. So if you're stressed, for example, it creates a layer between you and that stress. If you're in a situation where you feel uncomfortable because you're bored, for example, or you feel ill at ease socially, then again, it's creating a lubricating situation where you feel less connected to that discomfort. And it's similar as well when people watch television. So, you know, after work, you'll turn on the television and you'll sit there for like 2-3 hours. And that's a form of escapism as well, because you're basically escaping your own life and your own reality, and you're indulging in fantasy, you're indulging in a work of fiction for a few hours. And that can give you reprieve from the stresses of your own life. And I would say that marijuana very much plays a very similar role. I think a lot of people smoke it for escapism. Now, the differentiating factor for me, why I view it in a different light to all those other forms of escapism, is I think it has a different narrative to other escapist practices. So, for example, we all know that on a low level, television is not good for us. You're not supposed to be sitting in front of the TV vegetating for hours, because again, you know, you're basically not doing things with your life. Instead of you playing with your children or meeting up with your friends or reading a book that is productive and that makes you feel connected to other people, television, watching television or scrolling mindlessly through social media has the opposite effect. It makes you feel disconnected and it makes you lose so much time. So, you know, watching TV as a form of escapism in huge numbers of hours, you know, we all collectively kind of know it's not a good thing. That's why we don't brag about how much TV we watch. In fact, more often than not, we tend to underplay how much TV we watch. Same with other substances, for example. So with alcohol, we know that alcohol generally is not a good thing. You know, we do it socially, but we kind of narrow the times it is appropriate to have alcohol. So for example, like I said, having it in the morning is a no-no, but having it, you know, with some friends in the evening after work is socially acceptable. And people who indulge too much in alcohol, we look at them as sort of thinking, okay, you know, you're having too much of a good time, buddy, and you're in danger of sort of going down a bad track of addiction. So generally, other forms of escapism can be enjoyed within reason, but the excessive use of those things are generally sort of frowned upon collectively. Now, with marijuana, I would say the narrative around marijuana, especially around people who are weed smokers, is radically different. So first of all, there's a perception that it's not addictive. At least not addictive in the same way that we think of cocaine. So everybody knows that cocaine and heroin and even alcohol are addictive. But marijuana, nobody thinks of it as it being an addictive substance, particularly because we also see it as a natural substance. It's something that comes out of the ground. You can grow it yourself, you know, if it's legal to grow. And it's basically a plant that you light up, as opposed to a chemical substance that's being made in a lab, or a natural substance that's being changed to be addictive, like cocaine or heroin is. And I think in that perception of it being not addictive, it being natural and coming from nature and being relatively safe, really creates a false sense of security, because it negates all the other parts of smoking weed that actually aren't so positive, even on a small level. So one, for example, if you're indulging in weed all the time, what you're doing is you're basically creating a reward pathway each time you have it. So you have it, you feel good, you have it, you feel good, and you want to keep repeating that thing. So even though it isn't physiologically or biologically addictive in the way that heroin is, the repetition or the pleasure you get from smoking weed is creating that same level of dependency or a similar kind of dependency, in that the more you have, the more that you want to have. Weed also has withdrawal symptoms. So people who smoke all the time, when they don't smoke weed, it's not as though they're they feel the same way that people who never smoke weed feel. No, they feel a sense of emptiness. They feel a sense of discomfort. They feel as though something is missing. And they feel as though to quell that insecure feeling, they need to have weed. So it's very similar to, for example, Nicorette withdrawals, where it's not as though you're in sweats and you're writhing around on the floor the way that we see, for example, heroin withdrawals. You know the impact that the heroin withdrawals has on people, but it still does have a withdrawal period when you don't have it, when you're used to having it all the time. And outside the insecure physical withdrawal symptoms, escapism itself is addictive in that the more you indulge in behaviors where you can leave your reality to occupy, even on a temporary basis, a more pleasant reality, which is basically what you're doing with weed and with any substance that makes you lose your faculties and makes you lose your inhibition and makes you sort of see the world differently, that in itself can be an addictive feeling because you're getting conditioned to being literally on a different realm, on a different plane, because when you're smoking weed and when you're consuming substances that alter how you think and how you feel, you're literally not the same you in that moment that you are high, in that moment that you're consuming that substance. You're basically escaping from yourself and from your life and from your reality. And that in itself can be an addictive feeling that people chase. And I really want to hone in on the idea that it is in fact addictive, because I think that's what creates a false sense of security around weed and what draws people in and what perhaps traps them, because the trap is so incremental. It's kind of like smoking in that anybody who smokes for the first time obviously isn't addicted the first time you smoke. You don't smoke and suddenly it's like, oh, you're itching. You're like, I need to have another cigarette. It happens very, very slowly. You don't even realize it's happening. You have it once, then you maybe can go months without having it. Then you'll have it again. And then you'll have it. Each time you have it, the gap between not having it becomes smaller and smaller. And then before you know it, you used to only really bum cigarettes from other people or when other people offered you them. But then now you're buying a packet. Now you're buying a packet for yourself just to have for nights out. And then after a while, you're not just buying cigarettes for nights out. Now you just have them all the time. And then before you know it, you used to identify as a social smoker because even though you had the packets at home, really you had them, you know, when you were out, you brought them out with you and then you might have a couple at the end of the evening. But then there comes a time when you have it in the morning as well, and then you have it at lunchtime as well, then you have it after your dinner, and then before you know it, you are a smoker. But at no point did you decide or make a decision to become a smoker. It just sort of happened. And by the time you realize that it has happened, you basically can't go backwards because now you're chemically dependent on it because you've been smoking for so long that not only has it become a crutch in that you use it for, you use it when you're happy, you use it when you're depressed, you use it when you're stressed, use it basically, it accompanies you in all the moments of your life. But you also create a narrative to make yourself okay with the realization that you are no longer in control. So you'll start to make statements like, I like to smoke, you know, I identify as a smoker. I can't imagine life without being a smoker, you know? So those three things, the crutch component, the chemical dependency, and then the narrative that you tell yourself to justify those two things go hand in hand. And they happen so slowly that you never realize when it's happening until your fate is sealed. Marijuana is exactly the same way. Most people who are like weed smokers, like regular weed smokers, everyday weed smokers, you know, 4 out of 7 days a week weed smokers, it happens the same way. You know, they have it once at a party or a gathering, and then, you know, before they used to just have alcohol, but now every now and again they'll also have weed because it's around, because their partner has it, because their friend has it, and they don't buy it themselves. They only have it at parties, so they don't identify as somebody who smokes weed or as a weed smoker or somebody who's dependent on marijuana. But again, the gap between not having it and having it becomes smaller and smaller as time goes by. And then before you know it, you buy weed yourself. You've got a bag hanging around the house. You've got multiple bags that you have going. You feel a sense of insecurity if you know you're going to be amongst people who don't smoke weed. Or you're going to feel as though something is not quite right. You don't have your little buddy. If you go to a party or you go on a date or you go into a situation that you need to be sociable. Again, these things creep up on you. It's incremental. The dependency and the crutch and the reliance on it is incremental. And part of the reason why it creeps up on you is because ultimately you don't see it in the same way that dangerous drugs are seen. So it's not seen in the same way that heroin is seen or cocaine is seen or ketamine or all these other hard drugs. It's seen as a safe drug. It's seen as a natural drug. And therefore, you're much less likely to be on guard. You're much less likely to sort of be aware of when you are indulging too much or having it too frequently, or other people are less likely to stop you and say, hey, is everything okay? I see that you're sort of going down a bad track. It has this narrative that accompanies it that makes that creeping into dependency and addiction just that much less perceptible. And, you know, the dependency has lots of consequences. Some of them are obvious. So, for example, it impairs your short-term memory and attention. So one of the things I first noticed when I started being hyper aware of actually the fact that weed was addictive or it did affect people and how they thought even when they weren't smoking is that I had an experience of sort of describe of giving directions to somebody and I had to repeat them over and over again because it seemed as though what I was saying, by the time the words had left my mouth and they had heard it, they had already forgotten. So I saw in real time that actually their attention and their short-term memory was being impacted. So if your short-term memory is affected and your attention is affected, of course that's also going to have knock-on effects on your educational attainment, for example, or your career prospects, for example, because you are literally impairing your capacity to think clearly and your capacity to retain information. And this is particularly true for young people as well, because when you're younger, not only is your mind still developing, but also you're in school that requires attention. And what happens to children who can't sit still or can't retain information or can't be attentive in class is ultimately they're going to be the kids who are going to be disciplined all the time, who are going to be getting called out of class or getting written home or being put in detention because, again, they literally cannot sit still and think long enough and concentrate long enough for the teachers to be satisfied with their performances. And once you get branded in school as the bad kid or the kid who people shouldn't expect too much of, you know, 9 times out of 10, that basically ends up being what happens because the child also internalizes that message that they're not going to accomplish much with their school career. And they basically stop trying because the adults around them have stopped trying with them. So it has real knock-on effects. Another obvious consequence is that it just affects your judgment. So when you are high, you're going to feel different than who you are. And that's, to be honest, a lot of the time why people smoke it. So they smoke it because they want to feel braver. They smoke it because they want to be able to be more sociable. They smoke it because they want to be less anxious. But a lot of the time, it has consequences beyond the intended use. So it's not as though you can say, I'm going to smoke weed for it to relax me, but I don't want it to affect my decision making because that's not how weed works. So it has an all-encompassing effect. And what happens is that people end up losing their inhibition and making decisions that they regret. Many of these decisions, because they tend to take place in social settings, can be things surrounded around sexual experiences. So people, for example, being intimate with people they didn't plan on being intimate with, or being intimate with them in a way that isn't safe, so they're not using protection. Or, for example, they end up just feeling closer to people that really they have no business being close. So again, the weed is being taken because it's used to lubricate social situations. So for example, make people feel braver or feel less anxious or feel more sociable. But again, it has other consequences in that loss of inhibition obviously isn't confined to just one realm of decision making. And a lot of the time, it also transpires to other areas outside, for example, social settings. So people who smoke every day will be impaired every day. And one of the consequences of smoking weed is that not only does it make you feel relaxed and have a feeling of well-being, it also has the effect of making you feel as though you should be living life for now. You should seize the day now, you know, YOLO essentially. Or put another way, it encourages reckless abandon. It makes you feel as though all you have is now, or it's worthwhile indulging in now. And while that can be good in the sense that obviously we don't know how many days we have, and it might very well be our last day, and so of course we should aim to seize the day and have joyful moments and have moments of connection, but ultimately you can't live like that every day. And when you're smoking weed every day, is that you're in that mind frame every day, in the mind frame of, you know, you only live once, seize the day, carpe diem. And what that means is that some of the times you're making reckless decisions because you're not thinking about the future. And one of the things that can end up happening is people spending money, for example, that they shouldn't have, or making poor decisions around money. So for example, recklessly quitting jobs or not being able to have a job for a long time, because obviously work entails a routine and having to be at a certain time and your time not being your own and not being able to smoke all the time. So people end up finding ways to sort of dodge going to work or having to be confined in working in a structure for a very long time. And that has consequences on the money that you earn, has consequences on the things that you can afford, on your lifestyle. And also, you know, not to be a premature old person about this, but also like things like not having a pension impact you, things like not having health insurance, things like not having savings for when things go wrong. So you're living in the here and now, which in some ways is good because you're kind of present, I guess, or you're not deferring happiness for a future moment, or a future that may not come, which, you know, a lot of us can be guilty of, but you're doing it all the time, which means that actually you're compromising your future, and not just like future in 10 years time, even a month from now, if something should happen, God forbid, where you would need a surplus money, i.e. savings, that money isn't there because you're used to living in a seize the day mentality every day. And that mentality, unfortunately, is sort of diametrically opposed to the mentality of planning for the future. They're sort of direct opposites. And obviously the sweet spot is when we can be in the middle, in that one where we can be present for the here and now, indulging in moments of happiness and joy, but also obviously planning for a future that is going to come. Now, outside reckless or destructive short-termism is that people also just don't do the things that they're going to do. I don't know if you ever noticed this, but one thing I always notice about weed smokers is that they always have all these grand plans of what they're going to do, the dreams they're going to make materialize, the business they're going to start, the book they're going to write, the career they're going to like change, the course they're going to take. And they never happen. They never happen. So you'll talk to the person 6 months later, a year later, and they'll still be telling you about all these grand plans. But I guess what is creepy, I guess, about the experience of talking to somebody who has told you their ambitions and they're telling you those ambitions a year later, they say it with the same enthusiasm. They say it with the same, I'm about to do it right now. This is going to happen, you know, in the next few weeks. It's on the cusp of becoming a reality. But obviously, you know that they told you this 6 months ago, year ago, year and a half ago. And so for you, it's sort of like a groundhog experience where you're trying to reconcile the experience of wanting to be excited and enthusiastic about somebody's hopes and dreams and ambitions, but also sort of the reality of knowing that they have already told you all these things with the same energy and enthusiasm, and they haven't done anything about them, which means that likely you'll be hearing the same things with the same enthusiasm 6 months, a year and a half from now, and you're sort of expected to behave in the same way. Now, I think the reason why that happens is that I think they just forget they told you. And that's going back to the short-termism that I was talking about, the impairing your short-term memory. Because in most circumstances, when we tell people about the ambitions that we have, and for some reason we don't do them, and this could be at a micro level. Let's say, for example, you tell your friend, I'm trying to lose 20 pounds. If 6 months from now you haven't lost a pound, usually, because you remember that you've told them that you wanted to lose the 20 pounds and you're working towards the 20 pounds, and because now you haven't lost that 20 pounds and 6 months later, 9 times out of 10, people feel too embarrassed or too ashamed to say it again because they obviously know that you've already failed. So what's the point of sort of putting yourself in the same situation and having people sort of egg you on only not to do the thing that you said? With weed smokers, they forget they told you those things. They forgot they told you about the business they're going to start, or the book they're going to write, or the course they're going to take, or the trip they're going to go on. And so when they are recounting these things to you, for them, it's almost as though it's brand new information. It's fresh. It's real. It's going to happen, because they have lost not only short-term memory and their recollection of your interactions aren't as clear as yours, and therefore they're not even sure they told you this. In fact, they probably forgot they told you this, but also they lose sense of time. So if you've ever smoked weed, I've smoked weed. If you ever smoked weed, one of the things about smoking weed is that you lose a sense of time. So literally, you can smoke weed and 30 minutes feel like 5 minutes, because in some ways it's going very slowly, but in some ways you lose track of time. So I can only imagine what happens when you wake up and you smoke weed. It's lunchtime, you smoke weed again. You have it before dinner. You have it after dinner. You have it before bed. You've been high basically all that day, and you've done it for months and years. There's no way you're not losing track of time, and there's no way you're not losing track of how much time you're losing not accomplishing your goals and your dreams and your ambitions. And so when you're talking to somebody who is in that state of mind, or who is trapped in that, on that treadmill of sort of, you know, marching towards nowhere essentially, is that you are literally occupying different realities in a way, because you can't reconcile what they are saying to you with what you've experienced of them saying to you before. So you're essentially on different planes, in the sense that what they're experiencing this as the first time they've told you that. It has no history. This is brand new information that is going to happen. And for you, you're in a different realm. It's almost as though they have no history. They only have the present and the future, but you have the present, the future, and the history. So because you can reconcile all those three dimensions, it feels as though there's something out of sync with the experience you're having with that person, which is why I say it feels as though you're having different realities when you're interacting with somebody who's high, especially when you interact with them on a regular basis and you've known that person for a protracted period of time. You really see that in many ways they don't really realize how much time has passed. They don't realize that the past has happened. Therefore, it's going to taint or color your perception of them in the here and now. Then a final thing on the obvious, before I go into the less obvious consequences, is that, you know, I really think it degrades your quality of work. So many people, especially in the creative fields, will say that they feel like they become more creative when they are high. So they write better, they paint better, they compose better music. Or even people in more corporate jobs feel as though it lubricates them and loosens them up to be able to sort of work for longer periods. But I personally don't accept that, because sometimes people talk about creative fields or creativity as though it doesn't require critical thinking or clarity of thought or deep thinking even, or the exertion of energy to create something. And therefore, that's why they say it. That's why they say that they can be in a state of inebriation. They can be in a state where they don't have full control of their faculties, where they're not thinking clearly, where they can't judge things appropriately, and still claim that their work is better, or that they're thinking more creatively. And I think when people, you know, go down this train of thinking, I think what has happened is, as time has gone by and they've smoked weed more and more, they've lost the ability to claim their wins for themselves. So most times, like, if somebody's funny, somebody's funny. The weed may make them more likely to be forthcoming or to be open or to showcase their personality, but they're funny because they're funny because they were always funny. It's not as though the weed is a magic pill or a magic substance that they can take to give them the funny bone. If you're not funny, you're not going to be funny on weed. You're going to be the same sort of person just on weed. Similarly, if you're a great painter or a great composer or a great writer, you're going to be those things regardless of the weed. If anything, all the weed does is it makes you think slower, it makes you see things in with a lack of clarity, and also it makes you believe that your creativity is given by the weed. So instead of it being a quote-unquote God-given talent that you have, or something that is core to who you are, you're attributing those innate skills or innate interests or innate abilities in the weed, basically. And I can't imagine that that is an empowering state of being, because ultimately then it means that you feel as though if you don't have that crutch, then you're not going to be the best version of you. You're not going to be the best version of the creative. You're not going to paint as well. You're not going to compose as well. You're not going to write as well. You're not going to be as funny, because what you've done is you've misidentified where their creativity comes, and you've put it into this external thing, as opposed to recognizing that it's something that's within you, regardless of whether you have the weed or not. The weed may give you the courage in some circumstances to show others what you have, or the talent that you have, or the ability that you have, but that ability is only being showcased through the weed. It's always with you anyway. And ultimately as well, just on a basic level, you're literally thinking less clearly, you're seeing less clearly, you're thinking less clearly. So there's no way you're going to produce things that are more powerful or thought-provoking or striking, because your mind is muddled, you know, your thinking is muddled, your perception is muddled. Now, there are all the things that I would categorize as sort of the obvious things. I also sort of identify things that are much more insidious and much less perceptible. And one of those things is that when you smoke weed all the time and you indulge in really any substance that makes you lose a grasp on reality, is that you stop being a reliable witness to your own life, which I kind of alluded to earlier. So for example, you know, weed ideas are great ideas. And the part of the reason is because you kind of lose the capacity to be able to filter and think clearly things and filter or categorize things between what's great, what's good, what's bad, and what's not so good. Most people who've spoken to people who have been high will attest to the fact that, you know, the people who are high always think that their ideas, all the ideas they have are great. You know, they never have bad ideas or poor ideas. All their ideas are their next money-making ideas, their thing that's going to revolutionize the world. And obviously, that can't be true. It's not going to be true that all those ideas are great. On a more practical level, you also just forget experiences, or you don't have a good recollection with clarity of what happened, of what transpired, what you said, who said what, how did they say it, what the intonation was, you know, who was in the background, who was looking at you funny, what the promises they made to you. You just lose a sense of being able to remember with clarity what happened and what transpired in situations. Another reason why you stop being a reliable witness to your life is that the more you smoke weed, the less opportunities for self-reflection that there are. Because really, self-reflection requires clarity of thought, because you have to be in your clear thinking mind for you to process what has happened to you, what you have done, the experiences that you have had, and for you to be able to form a well-informed, measured understanding of what has happened. And through that process of recalling things as they were and interpreting things appropriately, you're able to learn lessons from them and make decisions differently in the future. And ultimately, when you're high all the time, is you never have that downtime of clarity or clear thinking for you to basically process properly what has happened and make different or better informed decisions in the future. Another insidious thing that's less obvious that happens when you smoke weed all the time is that as time goes by, you alienate non-weed smokers, because what happens is you think that people don't notice that you are high or that you are behaving as somebody who is high. You're repeating things you've said before. You're not doing things that you said you're going to do. You're overly excitable when you shouldn't be because it's not appropriate for the situation. Or you just have a level of energy that isn't appropriate for the situation. So maybe it's too high or too low. And also, you know, people who are high all the time tend to be flaky in that they don't do the things that they said they were going to do. They don't show up on time. They don't carry out their promises. And so over time, it alienates people who aren't weed smokers because they can't tolerate those things. And the problem with that is that you end up surrounded by similar people who also have a weaker grasp on the reality of things, who are also not accomplishing the goals that they have set out for themselves. And over time, you're reinforcing each other's delusional thinking. And while it might be pleasant for one sweet weed smoker to talk to another weed smoker about the things they've talked about over and over again in the past and not accomplished. When you're having that same experience with somebody who's not smoking weed, it's an alienating experience because they feel uncomfortable in that they recognize in you what's happening, and they also recognize in you that you don't realize that that's what's happening. So you find yourself in a situation where you're in the same place at the same time, having the same experience, but drawing radically different conclusions from that experience. And finally, what it does is that it makes you less brave, because the weed essentially becomes a crutch. So when you feel you need weed before you socialize, what you're saying to yourself is that I'm not as interesting, I'm not as funny, I'm not as brave when I'm not on weed, which means that all those adjectives that of bravery, of being sociable, of being interesting, basically are things that are imbued in the weed as opposed to the things that are inherently within us. And where the weed is being used for scary situations, so let's say, for example, people are afraid of social interactions, it basically kind of reinforces that, because now the weed becomes that coping mechanism for that discomfort. And it means that when you get through that discomfort, so one scenario is this. One scenario is you're afraid to go to a party because it's brand new people, it's outside your comfort zone, and you just don't know if you're going to click with people. You don't know if people are going to like you. You don't know if you're going to be able to make friends. So you go through that experience sober or like not high, and you realize that actually you can maintain conversations with people. You can be interesting. You can be funny. You are those things. And also people like you for you as you are in that state. It reinforces the idea that you are enough as you are by yourself in that moment. The opposite is also true, in that when you feel afraid to go to that social gathering or to be in that social event and you smoke weed to give you that Dutch courage, it means that all the friends that you make, the jokes that you tell, the interesting conversation that you have, at the back of your mind you believe that it's because of the weed, which means that it's reinforcing the idea that you yourself aren't enough, you yourself aren't funny sober, you yourself aren't interesting or aren't worth knowing or aren't able to make friends just as you are. So what happens is that you're going to rely on that crutch all the time, because it's reinforcing the idea that you need that crutch to be that version of you. So it robs you of that, of your courage, because it makes you feel as though you got to keep having it to have those positive experiences. But it also means that you can't claim the wins for yourself. You can't say that actually I was able to overcome that fear and have a positive experience, and actually I'm braver and more interesting than I thought, and I can do this again in the future. You don't get that experience when you've done it through weed. So all this to say is that I just don't think weed in general, smoking weed, especially in the way that it has increasingly become sort of socially normalized just to have all the time, as opposed to have to be had sparingly or to be had on a night out every now and again, you know, it hides the fact that it actually has lots of dangerous consequences, or maybe dangerous is the wrong word, but it certainly has lots of downside or lots of negative consequences that are kind of glazed over in the narrative that surrounds weed smokers or weed smoking. And that narrative of it being safe, it being natural, it being non-addictive actually makes it very dangerously appealing, because it doesn't make you realize what you're losing incrementally until it's too late. And what it does as well is it hides all the things that I've discussed in the episode. And I'd say the biggest one of all is just the loss of time, because you lose so much time, because the passage of time is experienced differently when you're smoking weed. And connected to that, you lose a sense of an objective reality, in that you on a daily basis or when you're smoking weed all the time are literally existing on a different plane than the rest of the population, because you're able to indulge in all this fantastical thinking of thinking you're going to make these things happen, these ambitions come true, these dreams come true. And actually what happens is you're at a standstill. You're at a standstill telling people about all these great ideas and all the things you're going to accomplish and all your hopes and dreams for the future, and doing it over and over again without the realization that that's what's happening. And other people because of the culture we live in, because sometimes people aren't brave enough to hold people to task and to say, and to sit them down and say, listen, this is what's happening to you and I'm really concerned about you. What happens is that you end up reinforcing that narrative amongst other weed smokers so that you're all collectively going nowhere together slowly. And while other forms of escapism are bad, they're probably not as bad in the same way, in that at the very least, for example, when you're drinking or when you're watching television or when you're scrolling on social media, you still have a pretty good grasp on reality because the social circumstances make it impossible for you to indulge so frequently, and people recognize it all, like recognize it easily as it being a problem when it becomes a problem, which is just not the same thing, or which cannot be said for weed in general. So with that wraps up this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll catch you on the next one.